Justin?
What's going on? What's up?
How you doing today?
Good, man. Just can't complain. Just making it. Another day, another dollar.
So I'm really excited. You're organizing a conference, and I want to get into, you know, what you're doing in Atlanta and what's going on with your conference. But I kind of wanted to like take it back a second and just like ask you, how did you get into web development? How did you become a web developer, and what was your path?
I went the more traditional route, kind of. Mm-hmm. I went to college route, where I started school at the University of New Haven in Connecticut. I started school as a chemistry major, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was like completely off of the whole IT route. Just for some context, I did grow up in the MySpace days. So I used to be one of them kids who used to charge people to like make themes and everything like that.
Oh, nice.
And I was just writing CSS and everything at the time, but I didn't really know that though. So a whole decade after that, that's, you know, when I began school, and I was a chemistry major, like I said, and I was like, okay, this is cool and all, but I really can't picture myself doing this for the rest of my life.
Like being a chemist, right? Like,
yeah, because like it got pretty boring. Like I was getting A's in the classes, but I was like, this is boring as hell to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up switching to like a business, and then I ended up switching schools to Mississippi State University.
Mm-hmm.
So after I switched there, I was in school of business, and I remember I was like, okay, this is cool, but I don't really like this. Then I switched over to a major in culinary, and I was doing culinary, and I was like, this is cool as well.
You're really trying to find yourself, weren't you?
Yeah, man. So to make a long story short, I switched like an additional 3 more times. And I recall the day, it was me and a friend named Chris Butler. And both of us were walking past this poster, and he was a computer engineer major at the time there.
Mm-hmm.
And the poster was like, do you like to do CSS and do you like to do HTML and everything? And I was like, yeah, that sounds dope as hell. And I went and talked to my academic advisor and said, I want to switch to that. And it was business information systems. So I ended up switching into that, and I ended up getting a minor in computer science too.
Okay. So what's business information systems? Is that, you know, it's like web development for business or like enterprise web development? Yeah. What is a business information system?
So I call it the art of business and computer science blended. So you're going to learn businessy stuff, like how to do like accounting, how to do payroll, how to do thread analysis. But at the same time, you're going to learn how to do like computer science-y things. You're going to learn how to like a program.
Yeah.
You're going to learn how to be a analyst, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn the middle ground. That way, no one could really get over on you on either side of the coin. But the only issue is that while the business side, you learn a crap ton, the IT side of it or the programming side, you don't learn as thorough. So that's why I did the whole minor in CS. So I could go back and forth with other engineers too.
Yeah. So, and then I know you worked a little bit on a master's degree, and you kind of switched to something described as instructional technology. So that's almost another flip of what you're pursuing and learning too. Is that true?
Yeah. So what happened with that was I actually got employed by the school my first day after graduation.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So they hired me one day after graduation as a full-time web dev. I highly recommend that anybody listening, do not go to work ASAP after you graduate, because I about burned out.
Take a little time.
Yeah, like I was burned out. Like, I kid you not, I had graduated on a Friday. I began working that Monday. And honestly, it's because I had bills to pay.
Yeah.
So once you graduate, you can't work for the school in the same capacity as prior, because I was a student worker in the IT department.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working there. And they were like, hey, we like everybody who works for us to be highly educated. So why don't you get your master's degree? I was like, nah, I'm done with school. And then they were like, well, it's free of charge. And I was like, yeah, but I got to take like a test, and I got to place in. And then they were like, nah, you really don't got to. There's a couple fields that you could just choose to get into. So I was like, okay, I got the business side down. I got the computer science side down. I need to get the IT side down now. I mean, not the IT, but the teaching IT side down.
Yeah, instructional technology, right?
Yeah. So I was like, cool. I could kind of teach people now how to do things and how to use tech, basically, which I enjoy doing to this day because I still mentor people. And even when I was in school, I was a part of the Association for Computer Machinery. Mm-hmm. And I was the head tutor for a good year and a half, I want to say.
It's a good combo, though, like computers, business, and, you know, teaching people and passing on information. I think it's like the a trifecta, right? It's a killer combo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my goal. And I didn't complete it because I ended up quitting that job and working for a private company now.
You know, you're a web developer, and I suspect you have opinions. And I'm wondering, what are you using in terms of your stack now? What's your preferred set of tools?
Cool. Yeah. So at my job right now, I do React is on the front end of anything that we do. Mm-hmm. Backend wise, we use C#. So I do a lot of C# mm-hmm. when I have to. But mostly my team keeps me on the front end of things. Other than that, I'm pretty open to everything else, man. I mean, I don't have no strong opinions on this language is better than this or that. I will give a full transparency, though, that I am not a big fan of Angular because I came from Angular 1.
Yeah.
So I began my journey truly when I was about to graduate and I started in Angular, and I had a terrible time in it. And yeah, that's how I discovered React. So I've been in React since 2014, about.
Yeah, so you were working in Angular, and then you see React, and it spoke to you. Like, it felt better to you, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Angular, I felt like you had to learn so much of their own way of thinking, mm-hmm. and I don't call it agnostic at all. I feel like you had to do it their way or the highway. Now, I've heard that isn't true anymore, but I just haven't gone back to like check it out. But I loved React because I already knew JavaScript. So I was like, hey, here's some tools that you could just wrap around your JavaScript and you could make things better. And they're like, oh, this makes complete sense.
Yeah. People are like, I've heard the argument like Angular is more of a framework where React is a toolkit, which I think like the lines are so blurred. Like on Egghead, we actually call React a framework because
yep.
whatever. But at the same time, React gives you like immense freedom with way less constraints. I think that's one of the big appeals.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. And for me, so going back to my friend, Chris Butler, mm-hmm. he ran into an issue when he worked at a PV. So if anybody don't know, PV is that guitar company that makes the amplifiers and all that other cool jazz.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah, and he actually engineered their app where it could talk across the a wire to where he could control a amplifier across like the room or so. Mm-hmm. He was doing it all in Angular, and Angular has this feedback loop, and he couldn't get past the feedback loop. I think it's really called the a digest loop. But when it came to React updates so quickly that he didn't run into that problem. And he was like, yeah, the way they made these things called lifecycle methods, it allows for things just to get done. And you don't got to worry about two-way data bindings or like figure out which way the data is coming or which way the data is going. It just all flows in one direction, pretty much.
Yeah, they gave us the idea of the virtual DOM and diffing a virtual DOM versus the idea of data binding, which was heavy in Angular 1. And I think right. It feels like most frameworks are kind of doing the virtual DOM, even if they present as binding. Because Vue in particular, which is kind of the spiritual successor to Angular 1, right. It's like Angular 1, the good parts. it has a virtual DOM, but it still gives you like that kind of feeling of binding.
Right. He explained it to me, and I was like, I kind of get what you're saying, but I don't really get it. Mm-hmm. And this is like in 2014, like January. So I'm talking about like reacting like it's infancy days.
Yep.
And he was like, think of a functional state machine from a microprocessors class that we had. And I was like, oh, this makes complete sense. And that's when the light bulb gone off. And I was like, okay, I enjoy this now. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And you can like, well, I wanted to have a friend that has been with you and can like present that metaphor to you. Like, that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
you go by Thug Debugger on Twitter, and I've noticed like a pattern, and debugging is something that you are personally passionate about. Is that a fact?
Yeah, man.
So debugging is something that you enjoy personally, like that's like your skill set, like you identify as a debugger.
Yeah.
So I only use console log to debug, and I was wondering, like, how can I improve? Like I've been doing this a long time. You know, I've had success as a developer, and I literally use console log every time. And what am I missing out on? What should I do? How can I improve and grow as a developer? Even, you know, like I'm, you know, old dude setting my ways, but I want to change and get better. What should I be doing? How can I improve that?
So the reason why I'm such a big advocate for the debugger over the console is because I feel like by the time the console prints out, you probably miss some critical data, or you probably miss some transition that you wouldn't have caught. I feel like when you use the debugger, that invokes a curiosity. It allows you to go into places that you wouldn't have even thought about. It also gives you a sneak peek of what's going on underneath the hood. Like, I guarantee you, if you ask people, have you ever opened up a React and actually checked out how it does this thing? Have you actually stepped through a lifecycle method trying to like figure out what's going on? And 80 or even 90% of people are going to be like, no, I really haven't ever thought about that. But when you're using the debugger, you get the opportunity. And people are going to argue like, well, you could just go into the node module and like check it out if you actually care that much. But where do you even know where to begin? Mm-hmm. When you use the debugger and you put these breakpoints in, it's going to guide you down a path. And you can start to like really speak the framework or the language of like what's going on. Like, oh, here's why this is not working. Here's how the engine neared it to actually work. Here is like what I'm trying to do. Versus getting mad with your console log and you're only seeing a tiny bit of data.
Yeah, I also use the debugger statement. So I will drop into the debugger, but then I'm doing it kind of, you know, I'm not using breakpoints and that kind of thing. And I know, like, I've seen modern development tools and they're amazing. And I wonder often if it's like, you know, you start at a certain point in kind of technology history, right? And, you know, console log is what was there. Mm-hmm. But now we have this robust tool, but I don't touch those tools. And I'm wondering, you know, what's the kind of entry level when you get into that? Which browser do you think is the strongest right now in terms of debugging and tooling in that regard?
When people ask me how to use it, I always say, start in a Visual Studio if you can. Mm-hmm. Typically, Visual Studio Code has a pretty good debugging setup.
Okay.
Where you could easily drop in breakpoints on that particular line that you're trying to target. And then when the code executes, you could actually go into that code in a environment that you feel comfortable with at that time. Versus trying to like figure out how to do it in like a Chrome. I've seen people get confused when I try to explain to them in Chrome. You take that exact same experience and you put it in Visual Studio Code. People are like, this is much easier. I actually grasp this on what's going on.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, and honestly, like I've never done that. So I've done it in Chrome. I've done it in, you know, Firefox and Safari, those tools. But I've never dropped into a debugging session in VS Code.
Yeah. And then the cool thing about VS Code is they have that live share option now. Mm-hmm. So I could make a breakpoint on like my end and I say, damn it, like, I don't know what's going on. I need some help. And then I could say, hey, Joel, can you chime in? And then you could actually watch that happen live.
Yeah. Get a live mutual debugging session going.
Right. And now you're like, okay, we could actually inspect and like actually see what's going on more thoroughly. Versus with the console, you're going to catch some data, but you won't catch every single detail. And sometimes that's what it takes. Like today, I was doing a C#. I haven't done C# in like God knows how long. Mm-hmm. So my team was like, hey, we need you to do this. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll, you know, do it. And I began on the web app where I just inspected a couple of elements. And I was like, okay, here's what's happening from the JavaScript point of view. I need to like figure out after JavaScript passes it off, what happens on the C# side. Mm-hmm. And I just honestly started dropping breakpoints and just, you know, walking down the code line after line pretty much.
Yeah. And then you figure it out and you get there quicker than you would, you know, like obviously I think quicker than you would if you were just trying to like piecemeal put, you know, log statements around and figure out what's going on. At that point, you're in the code and you're able to get a better vantage of the whole process.
Right. And it goes back to like, I have two senior engineers at my job that used to be on my team. And I used to not be a really big advocate for the debugger, but then they were like, think about your feedback loop. Mm-hmm. Like, think about how much time you are taking to actually write the console log, get back on the page, execute that again. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's, you know, very true. Mm-hmm. Versus going to the code, dropping the breakpoint, and then you hit that same breakpoint again and again and again. And the cool thing is that if you could catch the error, you can start tweaking it at that time and then do it again and again.
Yeah, I feel like because I used to do ActionScript 3 and it was really IDE based. I feel more than JavaScript is because the browser wasn't the issue.
Yeah.
And I feel like I used debugging tools more then, but JavaScript when I hopped into this world was kind of, you know, like because of the disconnect between my editor and the browser, like there's always been some friction there. But I feel like I'm missing out and I need to like step that up and check out these VS Code tools.
Man, that's crazy. You said ActionScript. I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah, rest in peace.
I mean, like, that's crazy. The other day, I was at this meetup. It's the React ATL meetup. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to some people, and this guy said, yeah, I am a Flash dev. And I was like, what? You're a who dev?
Yeah, still.
Right. And when he had said it, I was like, oh, you mean a past tense? And he was like, no, currently. And I was like, how, where, who? But then when you dig pretty deep, you could tell that a Flash has such a crippling effect on the industry because it's such a dependency that there's a whole lot of companies who just couldn't get it completely out of their code base. So now those are the people making like $300,000 every single year.
Maybe I should have stuck with it.
Yeah, I mean,
no, I'm pretty happy. I moved out, to be honest. But,
yeah, like I'm pretty happy too because even in college they taught us a COBOL, so I do know a COBOL too. And they're
it's like they're trying to make people not like computers is the goal. And sometimes I feel like who's gonna like COBOL is just, I mean, it's like a history class, I suppose, but like it's still, you know,
most people don't notice. So our school was like one of the only couple schools left teaching COBOL, which they don't at this time. Mm-hmm. The program at MSU taught it because we have two big fields that use COBOL, a banking, and then the other ones is Dillard's, like the clothing manufacturer.
Yeah, Dillard's makes all their employees take COBOL training. Yeah. All their developers, they still have to use it. So yeah, there's industry, there's people out there using it, but I just can't even imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that was their way of giving us job security, quote unquote, was like, hey, if you can't find a job elsewhere, you can always get one with a COBOL.
So what are you learning now? What's got you excited in terms of web development and new things that are happening?
I've been playing with this idea where it's called dynamic reducer allocation. Mm-hmm. So what I'm talking about is if you have two components on the screen and you want to render a brand new component, which is the same incarnation of component A and B, how do you get component C to inherit the same exact actions as component A and B, but dynamically update these store inside of Redux without causing a conflicts for component A and component B?
It would almost be like a syncing offline state to like database state. It sounds like it kind of reminds me of that in a way.
Yeah, because if you want the same actions, well, if you fire the same action on component C, technically component A and component B would be like, oh, I could talk about that action or I could respond to that action. Mm-hmm. But if you do it on component C, you're like, no, it's only for component C, not for component A and B. So I've been running into this problem at my job now. And I'm like, okay, how can I get past this? So I think I found a way, but that's really been the only thing that's keeping me up at night. A tech, on the like tech side. On the other side of life, I've been reading some books on like a habit, on like how to break habits, mm-hmm. and how to improve your memory, and it's pretty cool. So
Yeah, my favorite habit book in the last year or so. I love Power Habits. Yeah. It's been out for a while, but there's Atomic Habits by James Clear. It just blew my mind when I listened to it on an audiobook, and he narrates it, and it's really good in general. But it's kind of like the successor to Power of Habit, which is kind of the classic habit book. I love reading about that kind of stuff too. Like, your brain's a muscle, right? Like, how do we exercise it and grow it and make it stronger?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So what's something you personally think you need to get better at as a web developer, you know, like in terms of broader skills and how you approach your work?
Honestly, not being scared to say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah. And I'm not scared per se, but I'm scared of not knowing what I don't know.
Like being surprised, right? Like something jumping out at you and...
Yeah, because it's like, so you'll always have three lanes, I call it. Mm-hmm. You either know what you do know, or you know what you don't know, or you don't know what you don't know. And I'm like, okay, I could get past the first two, but the last category of you don't really know what you don't know is scary all the time.
Yeah, it's chaos, right?
Yeah, and I'm running into that problem now at my job where I'm doing C# where I don't know what I don't know sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, how do I ask a question on what I don't know? Goes back to using the debugger again. I just drop breakpoints everywhere, and then I try to formulate what's going on. But for the most part, it's hard, man, trying to figure it all out.
I think one of the things that's difficult too is also knowing like when you should stop and just ask, right? Like when you should stop and tap somebody on the shoulder and ask. Like, I like to figure things out on my own, but at the same time, you know, when do you just stop doing that and approach somebody that probably has the answer?
Yeah, because like at my job, I don't want to feel like a burden per se. Mm-hmm. And I have a good team, like the team I work on. So I'm the scrum master of the team. And we're a complete agile engineering force where we do 2 weeks sprints right now. And I don't want to feel like I'm slowing down the team. So sometimes I get scared to ask because I don't want to impede anybody else progress. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, if I do ask, what do I need to ask? And that's the hardest thing.
Like asking a good question, right?
Right. Because there isn't no such thing as a dumb question, but there are such a thing as questions that haven't been thoroughly vetted.
Yeah, my favorite resource, Stack Overflow, has an entire wiki section devoted to asking good questions, and it's like one of my favorite resources. And I send it to people, you know, just like, hey, just check this out, okay? Because there's two different ways. There's lots of ways to ask questions, and there's definitely good ways and there's bad ways, and it provides like a framework for asking good questions. And it's funny because in the process of asking a good question and in like preparing to ask a good question, you can often answer your own question.
That's the funny thing is that I feel like Stack Overflow gets a bad because of how you have to ask a question. A lot of people don't mm-hmm. know because they could see the polish side of me now, but I was one question out from being banned off of there because I would always ask questions questions that obviously had answered. And back to my old friend Chris Butler, he was like, hey, you have to learn how to ask a question. And I was like, well, I'm asking a question. People just don't want to answer it. He's like, no. You have to learn how to formulate a question that engineers are going to be able to be like, oh, here's your problem. And I always tell people the exact same thing. Like, hey, have you checked the board on how to ask a question? And the usual response is, no, I don't get how come I have to. I'm like, well, if you check the board first, then you will figure out how to ask a question so that you'll get the answer that you seek.
Yeah. And to me, it's the more I get comfortable with sales and marketing and that kind of thing, I think it's almost like a sales and marketing process, and it feels disconnected, but at the same time, that's what you're like trying to sell somebody on giving you some of their time to answer your question. And
that's very true.
And you're going to want to come back and be able to have the capital with them to ask again, right? Like, you want to be somebody that they're enthusiastic about helping. So you have to do your part to get to that point.
Right.
So Atlanta, I don't think people like necessarily think of Atlanta and think of like a tech hub, but it is in fact, you know, like a metropolis, and there's a lot of tech going on. And you are bringing a conference to Atlanta next summer. And can you tell us about what you're doing and what your conference is?
Man, so this is a part I get happy about because
nice.
People are always like, why ATL? Like, you could have did it in Cali, you could have did it in Texas. Why ATL? I mean, even do it up north. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you come visit ATL and you just hang out downtown for a couple of days, you could see the culture changing. You could see how in rich the culture already is, but you can see it moving in a more progressive manner to where mm-hmm. I feel like Atlanta is the next, I don't want to say Silicon Valley, but the next like major tech hub. But the cool thing mm-hmm. is I feel like it's going to be like a NYC situation where all the crossroads or all the people of the world are going to gather here. So I'm trying to get ahead of the curve, and I could already see it coming.
The conference is Render Atlanta, right?
Uh-huh.
And what are the goals of your conference?
So the goals, honestly, man, is it's kind of personal, but at the same time, it's about representing for ATL.
Mm-hmm.
So I got tired of traveling and going places to just go see a decent talk. Or just to go hang out with other React engineers. Because I do know that they're mm-hmm. here, but we're so scattered. And people would always say stuff to me like, hey, what's going on in ATL? Why isn't there anything going on there? I don't think ATL has all that great of engineers. You know, like people would say stuff like this to me. And I would be like, no, y'all just have never came. You're just judging the book by past history of it's in the South. So, you know, what can they have? So I was like, okay, I'm going to go on this mission to bring awareness to what's going on in ATL. Because like I said, we have great engineers. They're just in so many different neighborhoods of ATL. Because you got a lot of neighborhoods, like you got Midtown, you got Buckhead, a little Five Points. I mean, you have all over ATL.
Yeah, it's spread out.
Yeah, but I'm trying to bring everybody together. And at the same time, I was like, well, this is what I consider the cultural melting pot of the South. And there mm-hmm. Never has been a major React-focused conference here. Of course, we got Connect Tech, but that's like a conglomerate of like 20 other things going on.
Yeah.
I was like, I want something that's going to bring awareness to ATL, is going to show off the culture. It's also going to advocate for people that are underrepresented in tech because ATL has a huge population of minorities. So that, okay, I definitely want to include that too, but I want the best speakers possible.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give a shout out to my boy, Ken Wheeler, he was the one that honestly like pushed me because he was like, hey, why don't you like do something in ATL? I mean, I get that you know people, so you should probably leverage that. And I was like, you know, that sounds expensive as hell, you know?
And like a lot of work too, not expensive and a lot of work.
Right. But like, I'm not afraid of the work part because I used to do video game tournaments.
Oh, okay, cool. You've done this before.
Yeah, so like I have an event planning background, and like I used to do Smash tournaments and Tekken tournaments, so I get the whole mm-hmm. Planning side of it.
Yeah, like the logistics, you got that covered.
Right, but the whole, it's much easier to keep Smash players fed because you give them cookies and some pizza and some right,
Doritos.
It's much easier. Engineers are like doctors. They want a world-class service. And
they want cuisine. Right.
And even if they don't want that, you know, I don't want them to feel like they're coming to some conference that, okay, they skipped on everything else, but we got good talks.
Yeah, you want to put on a good show, right? Like you want the whole thing, you want it to be an experience for people and really showcase what Atlanta has to offer and you know what's going on
exactly
in the ATL.
Exactly. Yeah. 'Cause like ATL, man, give it like an additional 5 more years, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be a boom. I mean, they were in the top 5 for the new Amazon office. So, I mean, you know, they have the potential. We have a tiny bit more work to do, but I think ATL is on the right path, and I'm even a member at this private club called the Gathering Spot, where it's like a place for like-minded entrepreneurs to come gather. And every time I go in there, I'm always running into somebody of a prominence that I could talk to, and I'm like, hey, here's what I'm trying to do. Can you help me? And it's always a yes, because I want to help ATL be this beaming icon of progress. That was the goal, man, was to have a world-class conference with the best speakers, which if you ask me, I could tell you now, because by the time this comes out, we'll have dropped it. And with the best atmosphere possible and go above and beyond so that people could know what they should expect from every other conference. And at the same time, hammer home, hey, this is ATL. We are a progressive city filled with some of the best engineers that you know. A majority are from underrepresented groups. Come here, help us, hire us, and we could do great things.
Yeah, that's awesome, Justin. And I think like the work you're doing with Render ATL, and I'm just looking forward to this conference quite a bit and seeing what you get up to even after that. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come chat with me. It's been great. Thank you very much.
No problem, bro. No problem.